Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. We're up to book 13, chapter 17. Kutuzov, like all old people, did not sleep much at night. He often fell asleep unexpectedly in the daytime, but at night, lying on his bed without undressing, he generally remained awake, thinking. So he lay now on his bed, supporting his large, heavy, scarred head on his plump hand with his one eye open, meditating and peering into the darkness. Since Bennigsen, who corresponded with the Emperor and had more influence than anyone else on the staff, had begun to avoid him, Kutuzov was more at ease as to the possibility of himself and his troops being obliged to take part in useless aggressive movements. The lesson of the Tarutino battle and of the day before it, which Kutuzov remembered with pain, must, he thought, have some effect on others too. They must understand that we can only lose by taking the offensive. Patience and time are my warriors, my champions, thought Kutuzov. He knew that an apple should not be plucked while it is green. It will fall of itself when ripe, but if picked unripe, the apple is spoilt. The tree is harmed, and your teeth are set on edge. Like an experienced sportsman, he knew that the beast was wounded, and wounded as only the whole strength of Russia could have wounded it. But whether it was mortally wounded or not was still an undecided question. Now, by the fact of Lauriston and Barthelemy having been sent, and by the reports of the guerrillas, Kutuzov was almost sure that the wound was mortal. But he needed further proofs, and it was necessary to wait. They want to run to see how they have wounded it. When we shall see. Continual manoeuvres, continual advances, thought he. What for? Only to distinguish themselves, as if fighting were fun. They are like children from whom one can't get any sensible account of what has happened, because they all want to show how well they can fight. But that's not what is needed now. And what ingenious manoeuvres they all propose to me. It seems to them that when they have thought of two or three contingencies, he remembered the general plan sent from Petersburg, they have foreseen everything. But the contingencies are endless. The undecided question as to whether the wound inflicted at Borodino was mortal or not had hung over Kutuzov's head for a whole month. On the one hand, the French had occupied Moscow. On the other, Kutuzov felt assured that with all his being, that the terrible blow into which he and all the Russians had put their whole strength must have been mortal. But in any case, proofs were needed. He had waited a whole month for them, and grew more impatient the longer he waited. Lying on his bed during those sleepless nights, he did just what he reproached those younger generals for doing. He imagined all sorts of possible contingencies, just like the younger men, but with this difference, that he saw thousands of contingencies instead of two or three, and based nothing on them. The longer he thought, the more contingencies presented themselves. He imagined all sorts of movements of the Napoleonic army as a whole or in sections, against Petersburg or against him, or to outflank him. He thought, too, of the possibility, which he feared most of all, that Napoleon might fight him with his own weapon and remain in Moscow awaiting him. Kutuzov even imagined that Napoleon's army might turn back through Medin and Kukov. The footnote says Medin and Kukov lie in the northwest of Kaluga on a road running well to the south of Mosheysk-Smolensk Road, by which Napoleon eventually retreated westward. But the only thing he could not foresee was what happened. The insane, convulsive stampede of Napoleon's army during its first 11 days after leaving Moscow, a stampede which made possible what Kutuzov had not yet even dared to think of. the complete extermination of the French. Dorokhov's report about Prussia's division, the guerrillas' reports of distress in Napoleon's army, rumours of preparations for leaving Moscow, all confirmed the suspicion that the French army was beaten and preparing for flight. But these were only suspicions, suppositions, which seemed important to the younger men but not to Kutuzov. With his 60 years' experience, he knew what value to attach to rumours, knew how apt people who desire anything are to group all news so that it appears to confirm what they desire, and he knew how readily in such cases they omit all that makes for the contrary, and the more he desired, the less he allowed himself to believe it. This question absorbed all his mental powers. All else was to him only life's customary routine. To such customary routine belonged his conversations with the staff, the letters he wrote from Tarantino to Madame de Stael, the reading of novels, the distribution of awards, his correspondence with Petersburg, and so on. But the destruction of the French, which he alone foresaw, was his heart's one desire. On the night of the 11th of October, he lay leaning on his arm and thinking of that. There was a stir in the next room, and he heard the footsteps of Toll, Konotsin, and Bolkotrinov. "Hey, who's there? Come in, come in. What's news?" the field marshal called out to them. While a footman was lighting a candle, Toll communicated the substance of the news. "Who brought it?" asked Kutuzov, with a look which, when the candle was lit, struck Toll by its cold severity. "There can be no doubt about it, Your Highness. Call him in, call him here." Kutuzov sat up with one leg hanging down from the bed and his big paunch resting against the other, which doubled under him. He screwed up his seeing eye, to scrutinize the messenger more carefully, as if wishing to read in his face what preoccupied his own mind. Tell me, friend," said he to Bolkotrinov, in his low, aging voice, as he pulled together the shirt which gaped open now on his chest. "Come nearer, nearer. What news have you brought me, hey? That Napoleon has left Moscow, are you sure, hey?" Bolkotinov gave a detailed account from the beginning of all he had been told to report. "Speak quicker, quicker, don't torture me," Kutuzov interrupted him. Bolkotinov told him everything and was then silent, awaiting instructions. Toll was beginning to say something, but Kutuzov checked him. He tried to say something, but his face suddenly puckered and wrinkled. He waved his arm at Toll and turned the opposite side of the room to the corner darkened by the icons that hung there. "O Lord, my Creator, thou hast heard our prayer," said he in a tremulous voice with folded hands. "Russia is saved. I thank thee, O Lord." And he wept. All right, there we go. Another chapter down. And Kutuzov. My man. He's the best, isn't he? I really like Kutuzov. I know Tolstoy is like a Kutuzov fanboy, so we might be getting a bit of a biased view. He just does nothing. He just waits him out. He just outwaits the enemy. And it's so brilliant. Because the whole war is a big shambles. We know that. You know, every time the army tries to make a move, it's a big mess. Everything goes wrong. And you end up just shooting yourself in the foot every time you move. So, just don't move. Just wait for your enemy to make a mistake. Wait for an opening. And that's all he does. Pretty brilliant. And I really love how people keep coming up with to him with strategies and ideas and master plans. And they think they're so smart because they've come up with two or three contingencies, like an amateur chess player, you know. They can see two or three moves ahead. But Kutuzov is sitting and thinking and insisting on doing nothing, and all the while he's running thousands of contingencies through his head. Now, With that, I think maybe Tolstoy might be a little biased towards Kutuzov. But we get the idea that he is a genius. He has a genius for military planning. And that he knows what to do with all this planning. He sees all the ways it might go. Endless ways. And he knows that the best thing, even still, is to just do nothing and see what eventuates and just adapt to that. Really brilliant. Turtle Vader asks, do you think you could be as patient and calculating as Kutuzov? I wish I could. I don't, but even if you could have a little fraction of his patience and his strategic mind, I'd be much better off. The slow game. It's always better to play the slow game. I apologize, by the way, for my voice tonight. It's gone all weird again. You can probably tell. But I'm pushing through. Turtle Vader also said, now that the French are obviously mortally wounded, will the Russians push the advantage? Well, you know what? If Kutuzov's got anything to say, probably not. They'll probably still hang back and wait, because that's what they do. Sardonicus 09 says, the further I progress in life, the more I learn the power and wisdom of not speaking, acting, etc. until necessary. Conserving power and energy while others are flailing about is almost always the smart move. Effective listening and watching skills, coupled with having your thoughts and plans in order, generally will win you the race. Kutuzov is the man. Turtle Vader said, couldn't agree more. And I, too, could not agree more. Sardonicus 09, you're spot on. Also had this comment drop through on the podcast recently, which I thought I'd share. Lin Lee 54 said, I found your podcast, A Year of War and Peace, 3 weeks ago. And I've just heard the 100th episode, and I plan to finish on the 31st of the 12th. Enjoyed the novel. Shared. Well, thank you very much, Lynn, for sharing, and for listening. And for listening to 100 episodes in 3 weeks. That is pretty impressive binge listening, so good on you for that. Really cool stuff. Alright. I'm going to wrap up this episode here because my voice clearly needs to go to bed. Probably the rest of my body does too. Thank you very much for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.